This recording is a production of Faith Builders. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2013, held at Faith Builders on August 6 through 9.
Well, let us begin. This is developing reading comprehension skills. One of the questions we could ask is, how do we know if somebody has actually read something? How do you know if you have read something? If your eyes have moved over the page, if you have pronounced the words out loud, if you have recited the material back, there are different definitions I suppose you could give to reading, but I would say that reading requires some activity in the mind. Something has to happen. There has to be some chewing. Now, I'm guessing that you're all very busy right now converting what you ate for lunch into something that serves a purpose in your body. It's called digestion. And if that doesn't happen, what you ate doesn't really do you any good. In fact, the body has a very efficient way of getting rid of things if we don't process them. We can't really handle it. And so when we read something, in order for it to become part of us, for it to really make a difference, something has to happen with what goes in those eyes or the ears. It doesn't really make any difference whether you hear it or whether it goes in the eyes, whether you read it. There is oral reading, that is, in the ear. There is visual reading in the eye. The story, the text, whatever goes in, and something has to happen in the mind and heart in order for that to be processed, digested, made part of you, and become part of you. Otherwise, it's just so much food in the mouth or so much food sitting in the stomach. So we want to look at some ways of helping children to process what they've read. If you take a container of water, cold water, and put a little drop of food coloring in the corner, it sits there quite a while, and gradually the water gets colored with the food coloring because the molecules do in fact move and it pervades the whole container. If you heat the water up, it changes much more quickly. It pervades much more quickly. And it's just a little analogy for when something is read and goes in, we want it to somehow heat the mind, stir the child, so that he actually learns from what he's read. Younger children in grades one, they actually come to school with a very powerful vocabulary of about 24,000 words. That includes all forms of words like he and his and its and our and kick and kicks and kicking and kicked. Those are all different words. And they know those words and they can use them. And so their task is to learn the process of looking at a page of these funny-looking symbols and actually learn that when they look at these symbols, those symbols represent a word they already know. And so they see these funny-looking symbols, like perhaps like this, and they learn to say, him. Well, that's nothing new. They already know what him means, but they didn't know how to translate this from those symbols to the word him. But then, when they get older, they read to learn. But even all along the way, they use both those skills. And every teacher is a reading teacher. It doesn't matter what subject you teach. Your children read and need to process what they read. So I'm not really talking about reading class here. This is having children learn from what they take in, from what they read. Jesus was a reading teacher too. He asked his people numerous times, have you not read? How is it that you could, having read this or memorized this? In those days, the Pharisees memorized much of the scripture. How is it that you do not know this? But for whatever reason, they didn't. And we also think of the question, understandest thou what thou readest? And the person answered and said, how can I except some man help me? Now, the handouts, where are they located? We can leave the extras back here, but I want one of each of these myself, so excuse me. Okay. Sure. Anybody else? Is there anybody who doesn't have a handout of each? I changed the format a bit and I want to make sure I have one of these. Well, what we're going to start with here is looking at, I picked something we're familiar with, the account of the Good Samaritan, assuming we don't need to read it since we are familiar with it. And then let's look at some skills required for comprehension. Understandest thou what thou readest? Do you know what you have read? In order to understand something, you have to do something with it. I've often asked a student, you might ask a student a question like, what is pollination? The student might say, pollination is a process whereby pollen is transferred from a stamen to a pistil. And you say, oh, wow, that's a wonderful definition. That's a good enough definition, in fact, that it could go in the glossary. Of course, it sounds like a glossary. Now, so what really happens to pollination? Can you tell me in other words? Pollination is a process whereby pollen is transferred from a stamen to a pistil. Does that child understand pollination? Probably not. He may as well be reciting it in Spanish. He's reciting something. He has no idea. He does not comprehend. What is it? Probably not. If he did, he or she could say, well, it's like, you know, it's like when you have a little pollen, and the bee gets on the flower there and he crawls around and then he rubs some of that pollen off a part of the flower called the stamen, and then as he rubs around, why, some of it gets put on the pistil. Does that child understand? That's a good idea. And so there is, to comprehend, there are a number of skills required, and let's look at some examples here based on the account of the Good Samaritan. One of the skills, if a child comprehends what he or she has read, doesn't matter if this is a science lesson, math lesson, whatever. And by the way, in math, one of the things to ask your students is to explain how to solve a problem in words. And it's interesting how many people can, if it's set up, they can maybe get the answer, but they wouldn't be able to say that, for example, if there are six apples on the tree and four fall off, how many are left? Well, two, and they wouldn't be able to say, well, because you start with a certain amount on the tree, and that number was six, and some fell. One, two, three, four fell. So there's four on the ground, and that means there are two left on the tree. They should be able to. That's a relatively simple thing to comprehend. But you ask them to rephrase or to explain why they're doing the problem in that way, and you find out what the level of comprehension is. And so summarizing is the ability to, in summary, requires both the big picture and some detail. Children who cannot summarize will often do one of two things. They'll either be so general. So in the story of the Good Samaritan, they might say somebody was going somewhere and he got in trouble. And that's a generic, that's not really a summary of this story. And then the other person basically retells the story. A man was on the road from going down to Jericho, and then some thieves came along. Well, that's not a summary. That's a retelling. The ability to summarize requires a person to, like the example here, there was a traveler on the road to Jericho, and he was robbed and left for dead. A priest and Levite passed by without helping, and finally a Samaritan passerby helped him. That's a two-sentence summary. If somebody actually produced that, you would have a feel that they probably understand the story. Summarizing any lesson, what did we learn in this class about photosynthesis? A child should be able to summarize. Well, that's a comprehension skill necessary to demonstrate that you've comprehended. And if you practice summarizing, how do you practice this? Well, as a teacher, you can give a summary and have the students evaluate it and tell me what's wrong with this summary. Tell me how it could be improved. And if you have students, maybe get together in little groups and have them summarize this account now, and all of you do a mediocre job of it, make sure the summary has a problem so that the other people can find a problem. See, that way, if they don't know how to write a good summary, you don't really know whether they tried and couldn't, or whether they... It actually takes almost more skill to do a mediocre job on something purposefully than it, because you have to know what could be, and then you back off a little bit. And then as they read their summaries aloud, the other group should be able to say, well, that summary doesn't have any detail in it. It's just or that summary is just a bunch of detail. It doesn't give us the big picture. Stop me if you have any questions along the way. All right. Another skill. This first list, this is what you're wanting your students to develop. These abilities. If they can do these things, if they have these skills, they have the ability, the tools to comprehend what they've read, whether it's Bible, whatever subject. To explain, retell in your own words. And so, as a teacher, you learn to ask questions, and we'll look at this later. So it says, the priest came along and saw him and passed by on the other side. In the first place, especially with the King James, but this is King James here, but this would be in other instances too. As a teacher, you are alert to how your students might think. So it says this man was on the road and he fell among thieves. Do you think he sprained his ankle when he fell? What do you think? A student might say, well, the text doesn't tell me that. And over here you have somebody saying, I don't think he fell. Oh, really? What says he did? What? Okay, now why don't you tell me? What do you think happened when he fell among the thieves? Which way did he fall? Did he trip?
Did he chance to be caught by the thief?
Yes. He didn't fall, did he? Right. You got it. See? And so you're alert. You're alert as you read through something and you see in many cases its terms. And you're alert to the fact, I don't think a lot of the students will get that. And so you ask a question in such a way. And you don't want to just tell him. You don't say, now, boys and girls, it says here that he fell among thieves. Now, this doesn't really mean he fell. This means that he was going along, and there were some bandits along the road, and as he traveled along, they were there, and then they jumped out and got him. That's what fell means there. You could do that, but much better to have them think and notice that this word is used in a different way. It actually is a term, and when words are used in a particular way, and textbooks are full of it, of terms, whether it's freezing and thawing or whether it's action or reaction, there are words used in a particular way, and you have to be alert to that and call them to understand the terms. And so it says the priest saw him. The priest came that way and saw him and passed by on the other side. The Levite came and looked on him. What do you suppose the difference is between the way the priest saw and the Levite saw? Now, if you were younger children, I'd have somebody come up here and demonstrate, but what do you think was the difference in the way they... What's the difference between one seeing him and the other one looking on him? What do you suppose?
I'd say the one stopped and looked, and the other one glanced as he walked by.
Mm-hmm. Yes, can't you kind of imagine one walking by him and seeing him, and the other perhaps look. And you could ask the students now which is which. I'll demonstrate one of each. And if they understand the context, they should know that this was the one and the other was the one who stopped and looked. And then the Samaritan, as he journeyed, he saw him and had compassion on him. Now, how was his seeing different from what the other people saw? We assume they had sight in both eyes, and their eyes worked. So what was the difference in the way the Samaritan saw him. Anybody? All right, something happened. Didn't the heart work in the other people? Are you sure? Oh, their heart did something though, didn't it? Good, right? Yes. So his heart worked in a different way. The one man had compassion. Now, the other men saw him, and the Samaritan saw him and had compassion. The other men saw, and if you had to fill in the blank, what do you suppose they had?
Indifference,
maybe even revulsion. And you can ask your class who thinks that they had, who thinks they were, that struck them funny. Anybody thinks it struck them funny? No. Somebody might put his hand up. Somebody might think the first question the teacher asks is the right one, so put their hand up. And you can tell a lot by what they understand and how they respond. So being able to interpret, paraphrase in your own words or understand the term. If you read this and don't get the difference between seeing, you can't understand the passage. The student has to be able to do that, and they have to do it with their minds, and you can't do it for them. But you have to help them think. A third skill is to be able to actually picture or describe the setting and do it with specific details. So being able to picture, what setting was this? Was this country, city, mountaintop? Was the road full of people? Do you think the road was crowded with travelers? Was this a crowded road? What does anybody think? Was it crowded with people? I see somebody, why not? Why didn't you think it was crowded? Mm-hmm. Right. And students, how old should students be before they could think about that? You know, if this person got jumped on by bandits, there probably weren't many other people around. Do you think first graders could think that far if you stimulated? Or sixth grade, what level? What level could you tell me? What age? 12th grade? Well, I've taught a while. I know that 7th graders could, certainly. Probably 6th graders. And so being able to describe and being able to infer. So the road was this a dangerous place to travel? What do you think? The text, you'll have some students who will look through, they'll see, I don't see the word dangerous in here, so I don't know what was dangerous or not, because it doesn't say. Well, if somebody says, yes, it was dangerous, I think so, then why would you say it's dangerous? Why do you say that? Well, why do you think it was dangerous? Place to travel.
Because it says
dangerous? Mm-hmm. Right, because of what happened. And so you're inferring something based on something that happened in the story. Another ability is to be able to put in groups, classifying things. This starts out when children are very small and they're able to sort things when they do puzzles and string beads and so on, round and flat. But as they get older, seeing how things are similar, how they are different. And so, again, depending on the age group you're working with, you could talk about helpers, the unconcerned, evildoers. If we had to classify this, so we have people. We have a lawyer. We have Jesus. We have the people mentioned this passage. And we have the certain man. We have the Samaritan. We have the priest. We have the Levite. So, now, actually, the story itself doesn't include Jesus and the lawyer. It's just the thieves, and then the passers-by. And so which ones were the helpers? Which ones were the bad guys? Which ones, how do you classify these? And you can get some interesting discussions. And were the priest and Levite, were they in the unconcerned group, or should they be both in the unconcerned group and the bad guy group? from the Baby God group, why do you say that? It requires thinking to do that. Noting the sequence, it is important in many subjects to know what happens first, second, third. In this case, it's being able to recall what happened first, second, third. So the man gets into trouble first, and then the people come. In other subjects, you have, for example, with pollination, fertilization. Does it matter which one happens first? Or can one happen before the other? And if so, why? Must a plant experience pollination before it's fertilized, or must it be fertilized first and then pollinated? Well, if you understand it, you smile, all right? You smile with comprehension. If you're not sure, why, then you... And that's okay. If you're not sure, maybe you didn't study that. And you can tell by the light in the eye whether a person gets it or not. And comprehension, by the way, is it's enlightening. The light bulbs come on when a person comprehends. And it's fun to comprehend. Oh, I get it. Yes. Comparing and contrast. So a priest and a Levite, as a teacher, you will notice when you read a selection that there are terms. And some of these terms require background knowledge that the selection does not provide. So let's just throw this out. How are a priest and a Levite similar in who they are, how they operate, how they think, or whatever? Tell me some ways in which a priest and Levite are similar. I won't write them on the board. Let's just do this orally. Yes. Religious men. What else?
They're both Jewish.
Yes. Jewish religious men. Mm-hmm. What else?
They both knew the men.
All right. They both were witnesses in this case. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's quickly jump to some contrast. How are they different? How are they different as people, or how were they different in this story in either case? Let's get some contrast.
We talked about this before. The priest saw him, but then Levi looked on him.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a little difference there.
All right. What else? And what they did, and again, this is calling on background knowledge. How are a priest and a Levite as Jewish religious people, how are they different? If you think of Venn diagrams in math, are all priests Levites? Are all Levites priests? Or is there a relationship there?
All priests are Levites.
Priests have to be Levites, but not all Levites are priests. So one's a bigger category. Priests are from the Levites. All right? And so you can compare and contrast. And as you do that, you're noticing particularities about something that puts them in different categories. And as you do that, the contrast helps you understand both the terms better. Back to pollination and fertilization. One involves transfer of pollen from stamen to pistil. The other is the transfer, or the growing, rather, of the pollen grain then down through the pistil into the ovary, and the plant is fertilized. And so the contrast, they both involve pollen, but the one is a transfer outside and one is inside. So comparing and contrasting, these are abilities that we need to exercise in order to comprehend. And we don't do them, we don't do first one, then the other. We jump all around. And for this purpose in this class, we're looking at them individually. And this is not a comprehensive list. Visualizing, being able to see in your own mind. This is a jump now. So, how might a Good Samaritan function in today's world? Or a priest or a Levite? Any ideas at all of how might this play itself out in today's world? 2013. Well, we won't take the time on this. You can picture a person being along the road having car trouble, and I don't have time to stop. I'm on the way to teach a week. I have to get there in time to register. And so we see and pass by and whatever. Cause and effect. So why, according to the text, we can be pretty sure why the Samaritan stopped. Do we know that the Samaritan was busy and didn't have time? We don't really know that. But what do we know? What do we know based on the text and what we've read? He stopped, and we know something had happened inside. What happened in his heart? You told us earlier. Right. And some of the questions I'm asking here might seem self-evident, but imagine we have seventh graders here. And so, or sixth or fourth. And the compassion moved him. Now you do a jump. So, what might have moved these other people to not stop? What are some plausible reasons that they didn't? What's some ideas?
Worship schedules and duties.
Mm-hmm. Busy, maybe, or committed. Other possibilities.
Could have been gruesome.
Mm-hmm. Might have gotten their hands bloody.
Their reputation.
Oh, the reputation. Mm-hmm. Being seen. Anything else? What other possibilities?
What if I get jumped on?
Yes. I better hurry out of here. I might get jumped on too. What else? Once you get going, there are many reasonable possibilities. Maybe afraid of being defiled, maybe ritually defiled by touching somebody. Maybe I'm on the way to the temple, I'd have to go through a process of cleansing myself, and I can't take that time. So there's a number of reasons that could be. And then inferring. Teachers years ago said, read between the lines. Now we have to have a fancy word for everything, so we call it inferring. Well, so were the first two, were the priest and Levite neighbors to this man? And if the Samaritan was a neighbor, then what were the other two? And you could spend some time giving them. Well, let's try that. If you had to give them, if the Samaritan was a neighbor, how about a name for the priest and the Levite? Can you brainstorm a name that fits? One word? Or a phrase? What's happening? In order to answer that question, you have to think of what they did. You have to think of the situation. You have to think of the word neighbor, and what a neighbor means. The Samaritan was a neighbor. Then you have to cast around in your life experience and vocabulary for a word that fit. This is a big process, right? It takes some thinking.
Think of literature names like Hazy Kinch and Scrooge.
All right. Okay. Maybe they were Scrooge. Maybe. Any other possibilities? All right. Let's go to the back side of your paper. Distinguishing fact from opinion. A fact is something that reasonable people cannot disagree on and still be reasonable. So, if we say, is this a desk standing beside me, and is it in fact here? Well, we can quibble about the definitions of desks and so on, but it's there, and we see it, and so if something's a fact, all you have to do is go and verify it. Are the lights turned on in the hall? And did the man get robbed? All you have to do is go in the text and look, see what the text said. But an opinion is something that people can reasonably debate and disagree on. And so I have one suggestion here. So are Samaritans better than Israelites? Is that what Jesus was trying to say here, do you think? Is he saying that Samaritans are better than Israelites? The text doesn't say, so we can discuss this. I see you smiling. What are you thinking?
Well, he wasn't necessarily inferring that they were better, but it's also that it doesn't matter where you're from.
All right. So you think that Jesus wasn't really setting the Samaritans up as being better than the Israelites by this? Does anybody agree with that?
Yeah.
You think he wasn't? No, I don't think he was. But that's an opinion, isn't it? A reasonable opinion, I think, based on this. Mm-hmm. What else? What else could we say about this piece? What might be? What might this be pointing out or getting at?
So what you could argue a little bit, like, I agree with her, but mm-hmm. if you wanted to have that discussion, you could argue from the other side.
Why do you
why you're putting it in the
yeah, thank you. Why do you think he chose the Samaritan?
Because the Samaritan we look down on, and Jesus is saying the people we look down on are actually, they can be the heroes, so to speak, and mm-hmm. we shouldn't help them any less than the person yeah. that can help us back.
They can be a neighbor.
Mm-hmm. Maybe this is biblical racism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, former racism. Mm-hmm. Yeah, or ethnocentrism or something. Right. And so you can talk about what he might have been about here. And then you can draw conclusions, since it's important to be able to draw reasonable conclusions. So based on what this is saying, is a neighbor a helpful person? Does a neighbor help his neighbors? And you can discuss that. Notice these other levels, as we're getting to 12, 13, and 14, really rest upon the earlier ones. If you can't do 1, 2, 3, and 4, if you can't describe and understand and put it in your own words, you're not in a position to make any conclusions or come to any conclusions. And then you can say things like broad conclusions that go beyond the text. Help can come from unexpected sources, or one can be a religious leader and can fail to be a good neighbor. Is it conceivable that you can have a neighbor who goes to all the church meetings and all the bishop board meetings and is very, very busy, but doesn't have time to notice neighbor's help? Probably so. It could be. It's conceivable. And then the ability to discern what is really the basic issue here? People need help. Do we notice? Do we care? And finally, to evaluate. And when you evaluate, you have a standard out here, and you have something that was done, and you compare it to the standard. Does this match this? Is this measurement valid? Is this action valid? And so the thieves, did the thieves do wrong? They violated the traveler. Yes, they did. The Samaritan used the golden rule. Priest and Levite, did they use the golden rule? What do you think? Now, you tell me, let's do some thinking here. You try to put yourself in a student's place who argues that they did follow the golden rule. And tell me his or her line of thinking. Now, I'm asking you to put yourself in the shoes of a student. And think of a reason they would might give that said, yes, I think the priest and Levite did use the golden rule. What might they say? Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. I've had a variety of students over the years, and I can imagine some arguing that they did.
They might have consoled themselves by saying, I can't do much now, but I need people in town.
Okay. All right. Maybe they were going to go off and maybe they didn't have their cell phone with them, so they were going to go down the road and send help. And we don't know. Maybe they sent help. Maybe they actually met the Samaritan and said, hey, there's a guy back there that needs help. We don't. I doubt that, but we don't know that from the text. Well, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Some students say, I like to be pestered, so it's okay for me to pest others. I don't mind if somebody takes my lunch and hides it somewhere, and so it's okay for me to do that to others. Now, if you are, and so if I'm really in a hurry, I don't want to get myself hands dirty at the time, I don't expect other people to get their hands dirty with me either. So, and is that okay to have a standard like that, or is there some kind of a standard out here that you say it doesn't matter whether you don't mind if somebody does this to you or not. This is wrong and should not be done. What would you say to that kind of a answer? I see you nodding your head. What would you say?
I would say the Bible, through the Bible, we can do it. There is a standard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is. There are some things that are wrong. And regardless of what you might do in that time, it's the right thing to do. Well, those are a list of 15 basic skills for comprehension. Let's look at a few. So we have these skills we want our children to have if you're going to be able to digest what you've read and make it part of your understanding and actually use it to understand the world, whether it's understanding stories, understanding the Bible, understanding what happened in history, or understanding scientific principles. Now, what about some methods? Now, these overlap because the questions we looked at kind of hint at methods. But the one is to, looking at the methods now, establish a purpose for the reading. Read to find answers. Give a question, and then have the students go to the text, either for an assignment tomorrow or maybe in the moment. And so, for example, what is a neighbor? In fact, that's what prompted this whole story. Jesus was asked, who is my neighbor? And he responded with a story. And so if you read, and when you tell students to read between the lines, when you tell them, well, you can figure this out by reading the text, you can figure out the difference between sublimation and transpiration by reading the text. It's in that section. You can find out the difference. Then they have a specific reason to read that, and they're looking for a particular answer. And so they know what to focus on and what they don't need to focus on. That's one tool. Another one is to relate to what's being read to what they already know or to something outside of school or to yesterday's lesson. And students need help to make the connection between what they read in their school text and real life. And take something, for example, if you've just studied seeds, I'm thinking of this because we looked at a lesson recently in another class on this, but if you studied seeds and you learn that in order for a seed to germinate, it needs moisture and it needs some warm temperature and it needs air. And then if you would ask someone, so why do you suppose it says on the seed packet, store in a cool, dry place? Now, they should be able to make that connection. But if you don't so occasionally point out connections, they don't make any connection with real life at home and the things you read in a textbook. And they might think that you're making a quantum leap when you talk about seeds. And you're talking about my mom's seeds at home. What does that have to do with anything? Well, it has everything to do with it. That's why we, or the flip side, so if you take the seeds out of the pack and you want them to germinate, what do you suppose you might do? Does your mom ever sprout seeds before she puts them in the garden? What does she do? Well, yeah, she might lay them on some moist cotton and in a warm place and they start sprouting. Oh, well, that has something to do with real life, not something to do with what we read here. So having them make connections, they're supposed to do that. They need to be trained to do it. And then number three, I already alluded to that, but someone, this is John D. Morton, said years ago that when he started teaching, somebody told him that in the content subjects especially, 50 to 60% of the understanding of the subject is tied up with understanding terms. And that's why many books have the terms are often in bold print as you read through it. And so you take something like taxation. Now, I'll ask this rhetorically, but do you know what taxation is? That's a heavy-duty concept for a 6th or 7th grader to get through his head. Taxation. Well, it's more than just sitting down and paying taxes. But there's a concept there. And representation, and no taxation without representation. Well, those are two heavy-duty terms. And in order for that to mean anything other than some kind of a chant, you have to know those terms. And as a teacher, you need to be alert to words that are terms and help your students understand. Number five, typically we do have them answer questions. And you need to look over the assignments that your students are going to do. If you have ready-made assignments, if there are question boxes at the end of the lesson, if there are questions in the workbook, look over those questions and see what kind of questions they are. Sometimes there are questions that are downright confusing. Sometimes there's a whole set of questions that don't do any more than call for some facts, don't require any thinking. If your student comes to you and asks about a question in a workbook and you look at it and you yourself don't know where it's coming from or where it's going to, or what this question is about, and you say, I don't know. Well, you shouldn't have assigned it. You should have noticed it on the head. And that happens sometimes. And so there are some times to cross the question out or to give them additional question or two to help them. And again, finishing up here, ask a variety of questions. And you don't need to know the kind of question you're asking necessarily, but be sure you ask a variety. Who told the story? To whom was it told? If the students comprehend the Good Samaritan story, when they're finished, they should know, I think they should know the answer to these questions. They should know that Jesus told it. It was told to a lawyer. And do we know what the thieves took? Sometimes ask your students a question that has no answer to see what they do with it. We don't know, do they? Does it say? We can assume, but no. And so you ask a question, what did the thieves take? And what would the proper answer be for that?
What the student would say or what a proper answer?
Proper answer. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
You should say. I'm sure he probably had some money on him.
Mm. Yeah, probably. But we really can't say. We really can't say based on this. And so you ask a question like that, and a student who understands the story would say, we can't tell from what it says here. We can assume that it was valuables, maybe money, maybe gold, but we
actually,
can't
actually, it does tell. Say what he was.
Does it?
Yeah, it says that stripping of his raiment.
Oh, okay. Okay, so thank you. Thank you. You're right. Stripping of his raiment. So he took his clothes. So he had, people do that today. Yeah, they take, probably wasn't brand name in those days. But they take brand name clothing. Thank you. So he took his clothing. What about, did the man fight back? Doesn't say, does it?
But if he didn't, didn't do him any good.
Yeah, didn't do him any good. He got beat more. We don't really know that. And, all right. What I'd like to move on is on your other sheet now, I have four selections, and the first one is taken from a history textbook. It's actually taken from God's World His Story. And then there are some questions on the back side of that sheet that I gave you based on that selection. And then there's a short piece from the Whirly Bird, which is a fifth grade reader. And there's some questions based on that. The questions based on the Whirly Bird, that's 20 questions that were worked up by a group of students in a reading class some years ago. And then there's a short selection called No Quarrels. That's taken, I believe, from about a fourth grade level Rod and Staff reader. And last of all, The Golden Windows is two paragraphs from the story, and there's some questions that go with that. What we're going to do here for a while is I'm going to have you work on one of these. So I want you to, if you really want to do it by yourself, you may, but I prefer that you, in pairs or a group of three or four, not too many in the group, get yourselves in a group, pick one of the four, I don't care which one of the four, and take the questions, read through the selection first. Read through the selection. And then come up with as many answers as you can until I call time, and then we will we'll go over some of these. So when I say go, get yourselves in pairs or groups of two or three or four, and decide among you which selection you want to read, and then together discuss the questions, and you can quickly jot down some answers. And then when I call time, we're going to discuss some of these. So this will be the work part of the workshop. Any questions? You know what we're doing? All right, you may begin. I might say one more thing. As you get to answering these questions, why don't you try to role play? So try to answer them the way you think that age group would answer. So revolt in Palestine, your seventh graders. Whirlybird, your fifth graders. No quarrels, fourth graders. And Golden Wind is, I think, about third in there. So try to answer the way you, reasonably the way you think children that age would answer. And assume that you have in a group, when you have a group of children, you always have different types. So you always have one who's going to just say, I don't know. But then you're also going to have one who's a pretty sharp. So, all right, we need to stop here. Should be enough time for you to get an idea, feel for this. In the 7 minutes we have left, I'd like to look at a few of your answers with you and notice what happens in working with these. I want to point out first something I skipped over on the methods to develop comprehension on your first sheet, number 4, putting together accurate sentences using words chosen from the text. This is an idea that I picked up at some workshop 25 years ago or so, a very, very simple thing to do, very, very valuable thing to do. And so in the case of the Good Samaritan, you give simply 2 words, and if you have, you can do this orally with first graders before they can even write. You can do this with first graders. You can do it with older students. You can do it with college students. You give 2 or 3 words. The more words you give, the harder it is. The fewer words, the easier. But you choose words from the selection, and they need to use all those words in one sentence. They can use the words in any form and they in any order. And so, for example, the story, and you can check those. When you read that paper, you can check. As soon as you read the sentence, you know whether or not it's correct. There is no answer key for this, by the way. So, for example, one man, now, and you can also tell the student's level of comprehension. So the students who don't comprehend well will say something like this. They will say, the priest went down the road, and the priest did not help the injured man. They'll take the first word, they'll get that out of the way, then they'll put an and. Then they will process the second word. If you have 3 words, then they'll put an and then the third word, one big strung along sentence. What you want to see is something like this. The priest did not help the injured man. And then if you take, you can make this more difficult by having the words from different parts of the selection. The further apart they are in the selection, the more difficult it is to write the sentence. So if you write, for example, thieves, and donkey, and inn, for example. They'd have to say something like, the man who was injured by the thieves was taken by the Samaritan to an inn on a donkey. And that's fine. Next person might say, the Samaritan put a man on the donkey and took him to the inn after he found him injured by the thieves. And it fits the story. It has to be grammatical and it has to fit the story. In the case of no quarrels, and by the way, this is a technique you can use in any subject. You can use it in Bible, science, whatever. When you read through a story before your students do, if you want to give them your own assignment, you just sit there with a highlighter in your hand or a pen and you highlight certain words as you come across them in the text. And then you simply put them in groups of 3. Or 5, whatever, and give them those groups of words and have them write sentences. And it's a ready-made way of showing comprehension. So here's the account of Isaac and did anybody do the Isaac story? The Isaac and the wells. So here we have a sentence, wells, dug, filled, and quarrel, in any order, any form. And so if a person says, Isaac quarreled with the people around him and filled the wells that they dug. That person has a real problem, doesn't he, with understanding. He really missed the whole, he doesn't understand the story at all. If the student said something like, when Isaac dug wells, the people around him filled them, and then had a quarrel with Isaac, again, better sentence, they still don't have it all because Isaac would not quarrel. All right, let's go to the whirlybird. Who did the whirlybird? All right, quickly. Let me just pick a few of them out here. Why are there no quotation marks in this piece? Does anybody have an answer for that? Come on, quickly.
He wasn't talking out loud.
All right. Mm-hmm. The whole thing is just a person speaking. All right. Has he grown since the time he opened his eyes? Just call out the answer if you have it.
Yes.
Can you tell from sentence number one?
Yes,
that sentence tells you. All right, he opened his eyes. Now, that's normally you open your eyes in the morning when you get awake, right? You're sleeping. You open the eyes. Is that what this critter did here? Or what does open the eyes mean? Go ahead, somebody. He was just born, right? He was just born. And, all right. Let's pick a couple more out. Number eight, what's the season? Here, anybody?
Summer.
Summer, how do you know?
It says in the text.
Right, what does it say? Blue summer sky, right? Looks up through the leaves. What color are the leaves? Come on.
Green.
Green, how do you know?
It's summer.
Summertime, right? It doesn't say in the text, does it?
No.
Should fifth graders be able to figure that out? I think so. If it's summertime, yes, what color the leaves are, they should know that unless there's a real drought or something, they should be green. Right? What about today's weather? What's it like? Anybody? Yeah, sunny. How do you know? Yes, right, clear sky. Now, notice the purpose of these questions. You're not expecting the children to remember the details about this story. That's not the point. This kind of question is to develop a skill. It's to develop a skill, which then transfers to other areas. Let's look at number 14. What's the size of the egg? Anybody? All right. And how big is a navy bean? That's where you're calling on to know something from outside. As you read that, you realize, it says a navy bean, but does anybody have any idea how big a navy bean is? I mean, the navies, they have big ships, but a navy bean? And there's probably one student in the group that knows that, probably a number who don't. Let's go to the golden windows. Did anybody do that? Golden windows. All right. So a question here. If the parents had more money, what would they have done? Just say it. Yes. What about number five? What do you think the children would children respond to that? Do you have a hill where you like to go? How would your students respond to that question? Anybody?
If they understood like that means a favorite place.
Mm-hmm.
They'd probably say a tree or somewhere.
Yeah.
They would just say yes.
Okay, and then you talk about it. Tell me about it. Who has, and you see, some students would have no idea what you're talking about. We live in the flatland. I mean, we live in Kansas. All right, so then you'd have to ask somebody, okay, what's your hill? And give me an example of how you might, a person who understands this, what might he say or she?
Like the favorite place?
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking tree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I climb up in a tree and I like to look out across the country, or I take my dog and we sit out by the pond. And then some other students would get, I see. Okay, it doesn't have to be a hill. It's a favorite place. That's really what this is talking about. All right. And so as you discuss this, you know what? Their perspectives get broadened and they learn and they start developing skills. And so I'm sorry we don't have time to talk. It's actually fun to make up questions like this. Now, I just advise you, these questions, if you look over the kind of question, there's a reason those questions were asked. And there's a leading question there in the revolt in Palestine. Are people glad for the things taxes provide for them, such as roads? Mm-hmm. Well, then why would anybody ever complain about taxes? If I'm glad for what they pay, but I don't like that. Well, tell me, how would you think? And then what are high taxes? I mean, how high are they? What are high taxes anyway? And as you do this, you're resting and you're developing concepts and skills for life. So, God bless you, give you comprehension, and help you stir your students up to think. You're dismissed.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.